So it's been 1 year being an atheist, and I have put out a couple requests. If you follow my Twitter feed, you've probably seen this, asking for questions and comments about being an atheist that you want to have answered. And I got a few replies, and then I talked with people and kind of closer to me and found out what they had and questions and stuff like that. So I'm going to go over those today and just kind of talk about this. It's going to be a little bit informal, but hopefully there's some, I guess, information to learn. All right, here we go. I have no intro. I don't know why I do that. I just feel like it should be an intro and do that stuff. So the first question is, and I don't have any names for these. I just wrote them down what the questions were because I want to talk about the topics. You guys know who you are that asked, and thank you very much for doing so. So how do you explain your atheism to friends and family? That's a good question. I find it kind of difficult to do that because most of my family are Christians, and they like to talk religiously to each other. For me, I try to get in on those conversations, and I know I'm like a devil's advocate. I'm always the one going, the skeptic, right? And I'm always going, well, how do you know? Like, okay, so this is how it happened. And they get very frustrated because then they have to like start questioning why they're saying it. And I found that lately I'm left out of the conversation. Fine with me. So, you know, as far as family goes, that's how that is. And friends, some of them want to know why I'm an atheist, why I not believe in God, even though they themselves don't necessarily believe or follow it religiously. So we have a common ground, but at the same time, they still go, well, I still believe there's a God. I still believe it's real because I can think it. And thinking that there's a God, in other words, the ability to process thought or imagination and assume that one is real, doesn't necessarily mean that it is. And there's a lot of things we can think of that we knew weren't there at one time and now know is there. However, the difference is we do have a little bit of information as to who suggested God exists. And these are the people that wrote the Bible. And the only issue is there's no evidence supporting what they said. Nothing to begin with. So the likelihood of the Bible being true or legitimate kind of goes down to almost 0%. There's no credibility. And that's kind of something that I explain in those situations and why I feel that there is no credible or rational reason to yet then change your lifestyle and change your decisions, behaviors, life goals based on this book or based on the concept or philosophy that a God exists. And he has some rules and guidelines for how you live your life and all that kind of stuff. So that is a good question. The next one is, how do you explain it to children? I said that really weird. How do you explain it to children? I put so much emphasis on that. How do you explain it to children? Well, children need to be able to be children, for one. And I don't think it is a good thing to paranoia them or give them a sense of paranoia that there is a being all-seeing, all-knowing that is watching you and every movement you make. So you better be good. You better be nice or, you know, you'll get a lump of coal in your stocking. You know, I think children, you can explain to them in a sense of history. And that would mean that you got to explain all religions. Yeah, there are people that believe in gods. No one knows if they're real yet, and you got to represent it correctly. And I think this is where everyone kind of gets in the gray area, and then the conflict happens, and the contradictions happen, and everyone just starts yelling at everybody, and this is what I've noticed. You can explain it to them, but you got to do it correctly. You can't misrepresent it. Misrepresenting it is then saying that the Bible is true, that God is real, without having any actual scientific test to prove it. There's not one test that we can do for a God. And if we ever did and found one, how do we know it is a God? How do we know it is that God? Because that we have no other gods to compare it to. One of my favorite quotes is from Star Trek. I believe it's The Next Generation, where Q, if you haven't seen the series, Q is like this magical being out in space. And he tricks, he's like a trickster. Captain Picard and everybody on the Starship Enterprise. And I believe one of them said, I can't remember who it was, if and this might have been the older generation as well, the older series. He goes, why does a god need a spaceship? And that always was kind of interesting to me. So we don't even know if we found a god, how to test this god, and how to even compare it to anything else. We have no baseline for God right now. And that is something that leaves it open. And I've been explaining how this works. And it becomes a tool for anybody to use and manipulate for themselves, because it's left up to interpretation. So anyone can interpret what they want. Now, what that means for kids is they have an impressionable mind. They are not able to discern what is real, what is not, at a level that differentiates or separates the need to please their parents and caretakers. So if they can't do that, right, then to say that they should believe in it, they will do it just because you said so, to please you, because everyone else is. They have no idea that they don't need to do that, or they can make the decision for themselves. So I kind of think if you're going to explain this to children, if you're going to talk to them about it, you need to do it in a way that is objective. If they decide that they want to believe, you need to ask them, why do you want to believe? Why do you want to believe it? We don't know it's real. And if they say, well, because it seems like a fine idea, or whatever way they justify it, I think you kind of need to explain as the adult going, hey, I don't expect you to believe this just because I do. Or I don't expect you to believe it just because, you know, it's not going to please me any differently. It's not going to make me happy. It's not going to make me mad. You don't have to go to Sunday school if you don't want to. You know what I mean? Like, this needs to be presented. They're not really able to make a choice. Children aren't able to make choices until they're around 11 to 13. Now, they can make a choice, but they're not making it with a consideration of consequence, of, you know, why do I want to do this? Why do I not want to do this? What's my life goal? How is this going to affect me in 5 years? They're not really comprehending it that extensively. So it's very unfair, very cruel, and abusive to preach to children that a god is going to slay you or send you to hell if you don't follow his rules. There's just no way to comprehend that at that age. And if God was all-knowing and all-smart, he would know that he designed them not to be capable of that. All right, so the next question says, can you talk about it at work? Yeah, you can talk about atheism at work. It doesn't come up for me. Most of the people I work with are religious people. And a lot of times, I'm finding myself having to play along, because a lot of people don't understand, well, if you don't believe what I believe, you know, how is that even possible? How can you not believe that a God exists? And a lot of religious people want to say, how could you not? It's very obvious. Everyone else believes it. Or I feel like if I believe it, then everyone else should also believe it. And it's a bias. That's a personal bias. And I come across this a lot, and it's hard to kind of deal with. I have to fake, you know, being religious. I have to kind of go back to it. Or I say, yeah, I'm not really, you know, I don't go to church anymore. I'm not a religious person. And that could do something to my career. That could do something to my job. I could be taken off a case. There's so many things that could happen. So I try not to talk about this all too much when I'm at a case or working on the job. And I try to keep it limited. So that was, can you talk about it at work? The next question is, has it changed your daily routines? No. I mean, it kind of took something out of my daily routines, like reading my Bible, watching a sermon in the morning. I used to set my radio to listen to churches in the morning, and it would come on as a alarm, and I don't do that anymore. So I guess I eliminated things. But here's the thing. I have taken things out of my life that now no longer contribute to paranoia. I'm no longer worried about, am I doing the right thing? Am I in God's word enough? Is everyone else seeing that I'm in God's word? Am I going to be impressing people today? And what if I don't remember this verse? Like, you know, you get some scholars and other people that just remember every little verse to win their arguments until you learn that it's all straw men, and they rehearse these things, and that's how they remember it all. And they only remember particular verses, because when I go to mention verses they haven't heard, then it becomes a very interesting argument and they go, well, that's not in the Bible. I never read that. That's not what that means. That's taken out of context. So, you know, but anyways, side tangent there. Has it changed my daily routines? The only thing it allows me to do is sleep in. I no longer wake up to the alarm, to a sermon. I no longer go to church on Sundays, and I get to enjoy my day and my life the way I have it. I'm not concerned with if I'm doing it the way God wants me to, and I'm not concerned if it aligns with what God wants for me. So next question is, if family or friends are flaunting religion, how do you react? What if they are completely different behind closed doors, away from the social scene? Yeah, that's good. Well, I do know of a lot of people that are very different behind closed doors, or at least, you know, out of the particular, you know, religious scene. So we'll go drink, you know, and they're cursing and swearing and not acting like a religious person. And that's fine, especially since my position on the matter. However, if God was real and really doing real changes and real things, I would expect to see a different behavior. And then I see some where it is like that, but then I see more fear of trying things because, well, I don't know. I don't know if this is what God wants for me. Let me pray about it for a while and I'll find out. There's really no confirmation. And it really is just, in other words, should be saying, let me try to work this out with my anxiety, you know, or my paranoia, of my unimaginative God, sky wizard, whatever, and see if this works out into my future plans. Because if it doesn't work out, if it goes bad, like if it becomes a negative outcome, I can't attribute it to God. And then something's happening to me and I'm being punished. So I find the reasoning very irrational when it comes to a religious person. Not in a mean way, not in a bad way, but I don't find that the thought process is healthy. And, you know, being in psychology, being a behavioral therapist, there's a lot of positive ways we can talk about this where the behavior needs to be more positive. The self-talk needs to be more positive. And ultimately, it comes down to it works out because, you know, it works out for the person because it's all interpretive anyways. And it can be it worked out because it worked out, then God did it. And if it didn't work out, God doesn't want you to do it. And that's circular arguments and reasoning. How did family react to you coming out about your atheism? Yeah, you know, I think okay. It kind of goes back to the other question of how do you explain this to friends and family, as I did in the beginning of the podcast. I wouldn't say they were excited about it. I don't think they were welcoming of it. Because they're mostly religious, I think they, you know, kind of felt, hey, how can you not believe this? God does all things. God is powerful. God is this. And so you kind of deal with cognitive dissonance. And so what I found from most of it was that they wanted to tell me all these things were real because God did it. And how could I not believe that if I was raised that way? So there's a lot of biased comments in there. Now, you know, gatherings, most of the time, they all still pray before meals. And then I kind of feel like I get this glare when I'm not doing it or participating because, you know, I don't play into make-believe unless we know it's make-believe. Kind of like I don't play into schizophrenia with schizophrenic patients. I'm not going to play into talking to an invisible being that we actually think is real when it's never been real, you know? So yeah, I think, you know, coming out to family can be a good thing. And I think it's necessary because living like it didn't happen, living like you're not who you are and you can't be who you are because of the acceptance of family. If that's the case, go ahead and just cut ties with them. I mean, you don't have to just create boundaries. You don't have to like cut them off completely, but you don't have to hang around that if it's not going to be positive and conducive to a healthy relationship. And that's kind of the important part. And family can be very vindictive. They can be very powerful. Their comments can be a lot more impactful than, say, a friend's or another random person, or, you know, it can actually just, it can fold in on itself with a lot more impact. What choices did you make with God as a consideration versus now not having that authority to rely on? Well, I used to make a lot of choices based on what God, I thought God wanted me to do. I had a, I went into the military because I'm like, God's calling me to be in the military, to serve, to do these things. It'd be honorable. It'd be this. And honestly, I wouldn't have made that choice. I don't think. I thought God wanted me to be in music. I thought he wanted me to be a worship leader. I thought he wanted me to go to Bible college and be a pastor. I thought all sorts of things. Now, my life didn't work out that way. It didn't pan out and match up. But yeah, I used to think God wanted me to do a lot of things. I thought he wanted me to be in this relationship, even though it was adulterous or it was sinful or it was just plain stupid. And I thought he put me there because the circumstances were so drastic. Oh, I can handle it, right? I am a, you know, person of God. He's not going to give me anything I can't handle. Well, it was the stupidest fucking decisions I ever made in my life, with the consideration that God wanted me there. So fuck that. I wish I had done it a lot differently. That's kind of the difference in kind of the what I used to do versus now, where I kind of look at it. What's the impact? What's the consequence? How does this affect my future goals? Does it burst everyone's bubble when you talk about your atheism? Because isn't it a religion? No, atheism is not a religion. Atheism is simply a position on a particular premise that a God exists, and atheism is the premise that God does not exist, or the lack of belief that a God exists. So it's not a religion, because a religion, you'd have to have some idol or object then to worship, and people gather and create a congregation around that item or ideal. And that would then technically become a religion. Actually, it would become a cult. And I always beg the question, when did Christianity stop becoming a cult? I still believe it's a cult. I believe all religions are essentially cults. And because a religion, if real, would have a real God attached to it, not a belief of a real God attached to it. Big difference there. Another one comes from a gentleman on Twitter. You must be an evolutionist, and that takes a significant amount of faith. Just because I'm an atheist doesn't mean I'm an evolutionist, and I'm not an evolutionist. I don't believe in evolutionism, which another ism is a religion. There's no such thing. It's not worshiping. There's a lot of people that think if you're not that everyone, in other words, has a religion, regardless of what it is. So if you're not a Christian, you're a religion of whatever, yourself, of, you know, yourself is a God. You believe all these other things, and it's like frowned upon. To me, it's self-explanatory. Evolution is not a religion. Evolution has many new developments. I just was in a discussion the other day, and they said, natural selection and all this stuff. And I kind of go, wait a second. No, natural selection is not what it is anymore. It's been updated. It's adaptation. And it's a whole different world. We don't actually descend from apes. We have a common ancestor. We are still animals. We are Homo sapien. That's kind of the thing that people are getting really confused. And we have over 60,000 years to 200,000 years of history as Homo erectus, like a standing up species. So if you ever look at bacteria and how it splits off and evolves, it's kind of a similar idea. At some point, it split off, and that's what we became. We don't know how it happened. We just know by observation it did, and that's the best theory we have to this point in time. And the thing about theories is that it's the best graduated process of what we have today. When something becomes a theory in the scientific method based on hypothesis and evidence and everything that's been accumulated. This is based on, like, you know, when it becomes the theory, it's basically its highest level of achievement. And there's a lot of things we don't know absolutely, but there are things we absolutely know about things. And what that means is we know that a rock is a rock. We absolutely know a rock is a rock. What we do not absolutely know is everything about that rock. You know what I mean? So there's other minerals, there's other things, there's other composites, there's other pieces, there's other dimensions, there's probably crystals inside it. There's all these different things that could be a rock. And that's what that means. And this question, this one was submitted by someone named Mom, who wants to know, is your life any better? And don't you think it was a coincidence that you were baptized around the same time you became an atheist? Well, Mom, good question. No, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's more just coincidence. I don't think that it means that God or anything has is sending me a message, or that he is all knowing, or he is. I don't think that's it at all. I think it just happens to be part of a pattern in life of when I may have started, you know, realizing things, you know, and maybe when I start always reaffirming or trying to recheck my faith, which is what I used to do. And now I'm just kind of not doing that anymore. So, yeah, I mean, it just happens to be coincidence, probably around the same time. I didn't know, so it wasn't like I had it in mind. And I think we are subject to patterns in life tremendously. And as you know, as we watch Dr. Phil all the time, he likes to do the timeline. And so, yeah, we can kind of learn that there's patterns in our life of when things started to happen, how they started to happen, and all that kind of stuff. So I think that if you know, we were to do a timeline of my life and everything, and when I maybe started reading the Bible, when I started questioning things, that kind of stuff, we could probably look at it. It was probably around the same time every year. Most of the patterns we have in life are around the same times or certain seasons, or and that has a lot to do with environmental influence as well. So what else was happening around in August that was influential in my life? Because that could be likely how it all happened. Otherwise, I just think it was coincidence, and I don't think that that means God exists or anything. I think that's trying to make something out of nothing, an argument, you know, a position from argument. I don't know, but yeah, I don't think that God had anything to do with that. But is my life better? Yeah, I think so. I don't live in paranoia anymore. I don't have any feelings that I'm being watched, that I'm being punished, that there's mysterious forces out there. I no longer have, you know, the sleep paralysis and nightmares. I understand that most of everything I do is based on my own decisions. And I think I recognize a shared delusional force out in the world. You know, it's shared delusion. People are very susceptible and recognize patterns, and they're very susceptible to groupthink. And as you know about my psychological background, I've talked about this before and done the studies, and kind of not really intensive studies, but got the numbers and can show that a lot of people do believe in these things, even without sufficient evidence. And I always think that should be something considered. So, yeah, thanks, Mom, you know, for that question. I think it's very good. I still love you. I hope that answers your question. Yes, I think life is better, and I think I have a very clear view of a lot of things because I have taken the belief of a God out. And you know what? And it's not even despite anything. It's not from hatred. It's not from a position of wanting to prove everyone wrong. The whole idea of why I do this is now that I've made decisions in my life based on God, or what I was told was God, and they weren't good ones. You know these choices I made. They weren't good ones. They were stupid thoughts and stupid decisions. And I shouldn't have made them, but I did. And now I kind of look back and go, you know what? If I didn't have God, and I actually thought correctly, and I thought, I need to worry about my consequences, I need to worry about my future, my goals, I probably would have thought a lot differently. Now, I also come, as you know, I come from a damaged childhood a little bit, not entirely your fault or your fault at all, but the other parent. And it did significant trauma in my life, and it actually took me a very long time to get over that. And I didn't actually process all that until I was much older. And again, that has to do with the brain development. That's why we say the brain matures around 25. And this is actually physically shown in science and everything. We know that. But you and I both agree that the brain doesn't mature until 25. We are not actually thinking about our future consequences. A consequence that could be 5 years down the road based on decision now. When we're that young. When we're 21 even. When we're 23. When we're 25. You know, placing more beliefs in somewhere which are irrational and not based on evidence, and it really can take someone out of reality. And so I made bad decisions, and I'm trying to make better ones now, and I think I'm making much better ones now. I'm at least more stable and know who I am as a person, and I can defend who I am. I can defend what I believe. I can defend my intellect, my knowledge. I can admit when I'm wrong, although I know you all disagree with that because I don't like to do that at home. That's kind of a, mother-son thing, I think. You just can't stop being a son, especially when you're at home at times. So, sorry to give you a hard time. I love you. I'll try to do better. So yeah, thank you for your questions. These were great, everybody. Thanks again. So I'm going to take a couple minutes and just kind of give you, if you're new to being an atheist and, or you're losing your faith or, losing your religion, whatever that song is. Anyways, if you are struggling with things, I want to give you a couple tips. There are many communities of atheists out there. And you can check out the Atheist Experience. You can check out, trying to think of the other ones. Hold on. There's just many other atheist ones. The Atheist Experience is the one I kind of got started on. And I was just like, wow, there's other people out there. Cool. Like, I'm not the only one thinking this stuff. Going, hey, has anyone else figured this out? That the Bible isn't true? That there's no way that Jonah survived in a whale? There's just no possible even way he got swallowed? It's just not even, that's not even possible. So unless he was like a fairy or a gnome, like 5 inches tall or something, or a fish. So there's other things out there. There's other sources. There's plenty of other resources out there. And also if you want to know, if you're like really serious about if you know something and what you know is to be correct, push it against people that oppose it. Put it up against scrutiny, other people that claim to know, just put it to the biggest, hardest, harshest test you can. For me, that's going on like Ray Comfort's site, and just, I protest on there, by the way. I don't anymore because they banned me, but I used to. And then I do it on Twitter now, Ken Ham. For the Ark Encounter, which is really fun to protest him on Twitter. So please go on there and do that. It's a lot of fun. There's a lot of atheists on there. But there are communities of people protesting and pushing this information. And I get a lot of people that write me now from all over the world that are going, here's how I know God is real. And I go, okay, well, then we question it. I put in information and questions and kind of go, if this is true, then what? Why not this? How come I can't see it? Those kind of things. But yeah, take your information, push it against people that will question what you're telling them. And if you pass and you know that your argument is sound, that they're just giving you circular arguments, that they are not making good points, then the information that you know and possess is correct as it can be to this point in time. And you're continuing on forward without being wrong. And that's kind of a good feeling. So that's my first tip. If you have questions, push it against people that will question you. Don't push it against people that give you, you know, the answer that you want to hear. That's confirmation bias. And that's a lot of what Christians do, or religious people do. They go back to their Bibles and the Bible says it's true. So that's why it's true. And that's not very valid. Or my pastor says this, that's how I know. And again, that's not valid. And then everyone thinks, well, you're not an authority. So, you know, you can only be an authority and quote these things and say these things if you're an authority. Well, no, I can actually go to the science and data and look at it and say, hey, this doesn't seem to be accurate. And here's why. You know, I'm not just saying this person said it. You know, that's the lazy man's version of giving out information. The second tip is, if anyone talks about religion and your atheism, it should not be emotionally angry. It shouldn't be spiteful, and it shouldn't be, if anyone's getting angry at all, no one's a professional. You know, you're not an apologist. If you were an apologist, you'd be doing debates on stage. If you were a atheist and debating, you'd be doing it on stage if you were a professional. Or at least, you know, in books or whatever, in some sort of forum, in a professional forum, and you would know how to handle that. But if you're not, then just have a normal, casual conversation about it. No one needs to be angry at anybody. But I do find that a lot of religious people get very upset when you start messing with their cognitive dissonance. When you start messing with their beliefs, they will get very angry. So know how to, you know, just plant a seed, as they say. And another thing, not every atheist is anything else of all the other labels. It simply means you no longer possess the belief in a God. That is atheism. That's being an atheist. Or actually, it's not even atheism. Atheism isn't actually a thing. Being an atheist is just not being a theist. So it's a word for a position that you're on. You're not also an evolutionist because of that. You're not a self-God worshiping yourself because of it. You're just... you don't believe in the gods, you know, the Bibles. And, you know, for most Christians or religious people, you can argue, all right, so you're a theist for one God and an atheist for 3,999 others. I just take it one further. You know, that's another simple one. But yeah, you don't have to, you know, give in to all the politics of it. If you don't believe, you don't believe and move on. You know, there's a lot of good things you can learn. There's a lot of good things that if you want to question it, if you want to advocate, because I've seen bad things happen within families, within pastors' families, within the pastor, you know, at church, within, you know, just all sorts of religious people, like the high ups that have torn families apart, that have I've been yelled at, you know. I've seen debates go back and forth, people getting fired over certain you know, where they don't agree on beliefs. Just dumb stuff. It's all make-believe. It's like if everyone gathered for D&D and they found the Bible, and now they're trying to play the game within the rules and parameters, but most of them are vague and subjective. Like D&D, there are specific rules, and then there are some you can fudge and manipulate and move around and still have a fun time in this world of make-believe. The difference is, and I definitely love to engage in make-believe things. Just the other day, I was at the gas station, and the gentleman at the register is a avid gamer, and he's always like, "Hey, what game you playing now?" And we'll make comments to each other, like, "Good luck with your quest," and we know exactly that we're talking about D&D, or we'll make other, you know, jokes about that kind of stuff. It's just so cool. Like, you can have these conversations if you're in a make-believe world. And everything falls in. So I can definitely see the sense of wanting to be part of religion that, you know, everyone else is doing it. But here's the thing. One is actually changing your life on it. One is actually basing decisions, making, you know, these insecure notions that you're trying to pass as security. And it's like, it's not real. And when it comes to make-believe like D&D, I know it's not real. That's the huge difference of knowing if it's real or not. So you're an atheist now. And the best thing you can do is what is for you. If it is learning more as why you want to be an atheist or why you can no longer be a theist because your belief has just phased out, You know, find there's plenty of resources. You can write me. You can write the Atheist Experience. I'm not an advocate for them. I just that's who I went on to and spoke with and went on their Facebook page and all that stuff. And then I talk with people on Twitter and I talk with people on Facebook. And some of the people that replied to me on Facebook were the same ones that I went to Bible study with that were family friends, you know, growing up in the church. And, you know, despite my evidence, despite what I say to them, the rebuttal is we still believe because that is what we do, basically. None of them have ever conceded to my questions in it. No one ever finds concern in it. I'm just, you know, being filled with the enemy and influenced by the enemy and the devil. And that's why it's just a phase, you know, they say. And it's not a phase, guys. I mean, no one remembers when they stopped believing in Santa Claus. No one remembers when they started believing in Santa Claus. So I think that's kind of how that works. And, you know, I don't remember a specific moment I stopped believing in God. I remember a moment where I go, you know, I've tested the whole Bible, basically, and went from front to back, checked out all the stories, and I haven't found one to be true. I haven't found any of them to align with history either, with outside sources. I do find an alignment, you know, around 70 AD with some of the events. So that's interesting. And now I'm bringing back up the Flavian family wrote the Bible theory, which a lot of people already say is debunked, but all the people saying that are apologists. And my, you know, when you kind of cross-examine and put the dates and history and everything together, it actually kind of looks like the Flavian family might have wrote the whole Bible and had been very convincing with it because they had many other Bibles as a resource to copy and plagiarize. You know, it was very common back then. It's a much more back then than it is now, since now we have technology that can trace and find that stuff, you know, find copies and everything. So you're an atheist now. What's next? What do you do with that? You live your life. You live it with knowing that there's consequence to your actions now and 5 years from now. And you live it knowing who you are and why you know who you are. Not because anyone had told you, not because any God or any authority told you, but because you know that you are who you are because you got there by the decisions and everything that you made up until that point. Again, I advocate against religion and beliefs because it promotes a shared psychosis, a shared belief system that is based on nothing true. And it actually causes exclusion from all others. And everyone thinks if you're not like them, you are sinning. Sin's a made-up concept. Miracles are a made-up concept. Miracles are magic. The Trinity is a made-up concept. Evil is a made-up concept. Everyone has good intentions. Everyone has good intentions. Let that sink in. Evil is a made-up concept. There's, I mean, unless you can point to evil. Absolute evil is a made-up concept. Demons are a made-up concept. Heaven and hell are made-up concepts, and no one can know that they're there to begin with. No one can even come back and say, hey, heaven and hell are real. That's how I know they existed in the first place, because I died and came back. And everyone goes, oh, well, what about near-death? No, can't have a near-death because that's not dead. That's incapacitated. What else? God's made up. Jesus made up. Jesus may have been a real person, but he certainly didn't perform any magic or any miracles or anything. He didn't live without sin. Sin is a maybe he didn't have any transgressions against God, so he could live without sin. But sin doesn't account for all morality, and that's kind of a big issue. And morality, sin has a lot of negative impacts on other people. Morality does not. And morality is the measure or science of right and wrong to certain degrees or severity. So, you know, sin is just a transgression against God. If you're not following his rules, you're sinning. If you are gay, you're sinning. But in a moral sense, if two consenting adults are, you know, okay with it. It's not morally wrong. No one's being hurt. No one's being impacted negatively. And everyone goes, well, they are. And it's like, okay, but when you introduce beliefs into the process, belief is fallacious. It's a fallacious concept. I don't like the term belief. I don't like the term faith, because both of those have no discernment, no discrimination against right or wrong. And you can believe the bad things just as much as the good things. And you can believe fake things just as much as real things. So belief is a very fallacious concept. And when you introduce it into things, into other aspects of life, it really does create a very disharmonious way of living. It's not human. And even though that's the way our brains work, we really should fight against that. So that is the information I got for you today. That's the questions. Thank you for submitting your questions, everybody. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to the end of this podcast. Guys, I appreciate your support. And I am currently working as a behavioral therapist. It does not pay as much as it should. If you'd like to support this podcast because you like what I'm doing, you like what you hear, or even if you'd like to be on the podcast and help support me with content, that'd be great. Get a hold of me by any means. I'm on Twitter a lot at 1AdamParadox. That's the number 1AdamParadox. And you can also find me on Facebook, the Adam Paradox Podcast. And yeah, find me on any social means possible. Look me up. And you can actually type in my podcast on just Google, and I think you'll find like all 10 of my where the podcast is streaming, my websites, my Facebook, etc. And get a hold of me. The support that you can show and share through this would be tremendously welcomed and helpful. You can go to anchor.fm, the Adam Paradox, and you can submit a monthly payment of $1. I think it's $5 and $10. I prefer $10, everybody, just saying. This is my side gig. This is what I do in my free time. Everything helps. I'm still trying to find a second job so I can make all my ends meet. And, that's why moms are so great, by the way. And God had no help in that, in having a great mom. So, sorry, Mom. Anyways, thanks again for listening. This is Adam, your host of the Adam Paradox, the captain of the show, the El Dorito? No, I have no idea where I was going with that. All right. Well, this is Adam, your host, signing off.